This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
But just like Kevin Bacon.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Only on Project Nerd.
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Hey, pro nerds, welcome to another episode of the Nerdcast. This one's a Nerdcast recast. It's Iggy, your host, and I'm here with Gallo as my co-host. How you doing, Gallo?
Doing great, feeling great. Got a lot of snow, but, you know, what can you expect? It's winter.
Yeah, everybody's getting a lot of snow right now. But if you're not familiar with the recast, the way we do it is we bring in a special guest each week. But before I let Gallo do that introduction, actually, I'm just going to let you know that obviously the Nerdcast by Project Nerd is brought to you by Geek Garage. Head on over to geekgarage.com to see some of the world's coolest geek and pop culture themed vehicles, as well as stay up to date on events and even register your nerdy car. That's geekgarage.com, geek-garage.com. All right, Gallo. Do the honors. Who's our special guest for this week's recast?
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one and only Mr. Peter Macon.
There you go. Yay.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The loud applause.
Coming to the stage right now.
check. Thank you. One, two.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I know you're probably busy because I think if anybody is paying attention, Orville season three finally is back to filming. So I know you've been very shooting. Busy.
I got lucky today. I had the day off because they're on location on some episode that I'm not. They don't really let Boris off the ship that much. So, you know, like when they go to the planets, my days usually get a little weird. But yeah, so they're shooting something. But yeah, we and I have to tell you, these episodes are bananas. I mean, I thought that we were really doing something season two as a leap from season one, but like, these episodes that we're shooting now are just redonkulous. I mean, I can't wait for you guys to see this stuff because I've seen two episodes and they're amazing. I mean, they've retooled everything. That's all I can specifically say, but it's going to be well worth the 9-year wait. That's what
it feels that way.
Yeah, it does feel that way.
You bring up something big there too, because I wanted to touch on that. Seth MacFarlane making a Star Trek, basically. I'm expecting Family Guy in space. And then we get that season one. And I could tell you what, especially as a huge sci-fi nerd myself, a Star Trek fan, blown away. And my kids are blown away too. I watch it with she's now 10, and then my 16-year-old son, and they love it just as much. And the topics that you guys take on sometimes, and it's still got a little bit of humor in there, but it's far better than anything I expected it to be. Not that I expected it to be bad, but it's just, that's how good it is. I love this show.
Well, thank you. I mean, well, you can't really do, now that we're doing like 60 minutes, you can't really do, you know, 48 minutes is what it was before, but 48, 60 minutes worth of jokes. I mean, it's like you can get away with that for half an hour, but then after a while, it's just like people check out. And I think that more than anything, the appeal was to blend like comedy and tragedy sort of together. Like I said this before, but my clown professor studied clown for a couple of years at the Yale School of Drama. And my clown professor was like, without the possibility of tragedy, comedy can't exist. You know what I mean? I think that's why comedians are so tortured and, you know, but like, you just have to laugh to keep from crying. But like, you know, the essence of the show is simplicity, you know, and sort of like a, you know, like not a dystopic future, but like, you know, just people going to work and just like sort of the everyday, you know, drama that unfolds with just like, you know, like The Office, you know, like this, it's like kind of, like, you know what I mean? And it just so happens to be like 500 years in the future, and you know, we still have problems. But like, yeah, the backbone of the show is blending humor in with like, you know, some serious stakes, you know, like, and that's what I think is compelling. But yeah, both of my sons, we have almost a 3 and a 5-year-old now. They're 2 and 4, but like, they're like, we'll watch the show, and I'm like, daddy, 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 it's daddy. And like, superhero themed day at school, and like wear your favorite superhero shirt, and my 2-year-old wore the Abortus t-shirt. I'm like, awesome. So that felt
wait great. a minute wait a minute I want to board his t-shirt.
Yeah, this is a bootleg. This is something I had no control over. It's bootleg. I claim no royalties, no residuals off of it. I didn't make it. It just showed up.
Make that clear to Fox.
Yeah, just so you know, I'm not like mass marketing Bordas t-shirts on the. I wish I was.
So Peter, before we backtrack, for those of our fans, because another thing that we really want to do with these podcasts is kind of cross all the nerd verses, you know, and introduce different people to different things.
Yeah, yeah.
So for people that may not be familiar with the Orville,
okay,
how would you describe Bordas to them?
I would say I would say if a Klingon, the Thing, and Sam the Eagle from the Muppets had a love child, that would be... That would be Bordas. You know what I mean?
I got him on the shelf back there, yeah. Sam the Eagle, actually.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, I really think, and then you sprinkle in a little bit of Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, the dignity of Sam the Eagle and Klingon and the Thing, they're just, but he's a sensitive guy, Bordas. I mean, you know, so he's learning. I think what's really interesting is playing an alien where obviously humanity, but English and idiosyncrasies are not your first, like English is not your first language. You know what I mean? Like, or even like your first way of communicating, like through your, like the, so it's been fun to approach everything with like a childlike level of enthusiasm, but he's very serious, which I think is what makes it funny. Like, you know, what's like Rudolph the Reindeer? What, you know, Santa Claus? Things like that, you know, like we're little subtle details that, you know, to pick up on what it's like to be, you know, to play an alien. But yeah, I mean, just keeping it. And he's, you know, it's ironic, man. Like you'll see the crazy stuff that I get to do juxtaposed with like this stoicism is, you know, it's yeah, that's the joke of Bordas. So, you know, and I would describe the Orville as, you know, I mean, this is Seth's crazy brain, but like, it's like if Family Guy and Star Trek, you know, went to the drive-in and, you know,
we're following.
I don't know, wherever kids these days make out in their cars.
right.
But yeah, it is that. So it's a blend of, you know, and I think that, you know, Star Trek being, you know, the original Star Trek, that I won't say being ahead of its time, but being definitely a product of its time, you know, with like, you know, the first interracial kiss on TV, and then like aliens and sexy, like making aliens. You understood why Kirk got down with all those green ladies. They're like, oh man,
right?
I would do it. You know what I mean? But you know, it would just kind of putting, you know, like I think the Orville is, if I dare say that the Orville is kind of like a Star Trek of its time, in the sense only just that it's dealing with like political issues in a way that I don't know that like a lot of other science fiction shows are doing it so on the nose. Do you know what I mean?
It really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk mm-hmm. about how
yeah, absolutely
tough and rigid Bordas is, but if comparing it to our culture, it would be like a member of the queer community, I guess. It would be, obviously it's a different culture. That's the way it is. So
right.
They even try to make it, but it is, when you're introduced to these other characteristics of the character, it's not where you expected it to be that character. You felt if they were going to tackle that on that show, it would be with another character, a character you might more see typecast into that. And I think that's what makes it amazing. Like you said, tackling things you just didn't expect.
Yeah. Just going against type, you know, and just, right. You know, I mean, and just to put this in your mind so that you can't unsee it. People were like, well,
now we're getting excited.
Like when Mocklin's, you know, when they get down, they're doing the dance, the dirty, the, you know, the beast with two backs, whatever you want to call it. What is that like? And I'm like, well, if you were to take two boulders, you know, football size boulders, so I guess it's not a boulder, big rocks, and put them in the dryer, the sound, that's the Mocklin love dance.
Just, you know, It's extra funny for me because I was literally just on a work call earlier with the dryer in the background running with the like those little the dryer balls in there just making that extra noise. So it's fresh in my mind is what I'm thinking.
There you go.
Perfect. Well, let's as Gallo mentioned, we did want to go backwards. And we did want to talk about some of the other things because you kind of you brought up something already that's fascinating, you know, clown school basically. I mean, theater seems to be where it all kind of started, and that seems to be your big thing.
Yeah.
From the Midwest too, really.
Yeah. I mean, we grew up in Chicago, and then I don't feel you. I don't feel your pain, right? I mean, I feel your pain, Gallo, right now, like all the damn snow.
Peter, we miss you, man. Come home, bro.
I'm good. I'm good.
I don't want anything to do with that.
I come in the summer and the fall. Like, I'm not dealing with like sub-zero. That hawk, I can't deal. But yeah, so I grew up in Chicago, and then we left and moved to Minneapolis. And then that's where, you know, because the schools were really shit in Chicago, like the public school system where I was going to. Was just like
what neighborhood?
The last public school I went to was like on 103rd and Halsted, pretty much. You know what I mean? Like not as far, but then we lived almost in Calumet, like 120th and Union, so way out there. Like, you know, Inglewood, grew up in there, like 63rd and Green. Anyway, but like the school that we were going to, like, you know, sometimes we didn't have books. You know what I mean? Sometimes we had to share books. Sometimes it's like, you know, just couldn't really, you know, and like, and then the gangs were really bad too, like the Disciples and Latin Kings, like El Rookins, like, but yeah, so we moved to Minnesota and, you know, the public schools were a lot better. We had books, you know, arts education. And so, I mean, I had like, I think I did my first play when I was in third grade in Chicago. We did a tour of the Wiz. We had like this amazing third grade music teacher. Her name was Mrs. Burton. She had a singing group called Burton and the Doo-Wops or something like that. And they would go out and they would sing in clubs and stuff, but she was our music teacher. And so she was just really passionate about music. And so, you know, we did the Wiz and we did like, oh no, I take that back. My first play was Alice in Wonderland. Like, and I played, but anyway, we're going way, way back. But since I was like, I want to say 5 or 6, been like interested in being an actor. But cut to when I graduated from high school, I went on a tour for like, we did like a 40 city 22 state tour. So that's why I know about like all these places like Billings and like Bozeman, Montana, and like, you know, like all these places up in New England and like Vermont, where Ben and Jerry's have their whole operation. And like there's like a somewhere, is it New Hampshire or is it Vermont? I think I want to say it's New Hampshire, where like there's like a Saab factory there, so everyone drives Saabs. It's a little just weird, like, you know, factoids that you only know from going out and visiting and, you know, playing in places. But yeah, so I toured when I was 17, and I left home a vegetarian virgin and came home not that. That road life is rough on you, bro. Like a weed smoking fornicator. yeah, I mean, just like,
and this was theater, right?
This is theater, man. So this is like, I mean, this is like, you know, we were doing the same show for 9 months, and you know, you still continue to grow, but it's vastly different than film and TV, like growing up in the theater. So then, you know, I got my equity card. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's Actors Equity Association, and that's the professional stage actors and stage performers and stage creatives union, which is, I don't know how they're surviving right now. But so then I went on another tour when I was 19, and then, but I was still going to college, you know, so I would go to like, I went to art school for undergrad and studied painting and basically like filmmaking. So then I would go from school to rehearsal and rehearsal to school. And it was just kind of nuts doing that. And then I moved out to San Francisco to finish art school and to continue working on the stages out there. And then I started doing a little bit of TV. I got to do, I think one of my first TV gigs was with Don Johnson on the show called Nash Bridges. That
little show.
Cheech Marin and Cheech Marin, I think. And like, it was like, okay, fucking good. I really like it. I'm like, oh man, it's Sonny Crockett. What up? You know, like, so, you know, but then there's like, there wasn't a ton of TV or film production in the Bay Area. And I had graduated from art school. and I had my sights always set on New York. So then I went to New York and got my ass kicked there for a while and worked on the stages out there, made it up to Broadway. And then, actually, when I moved out to New York, I had a job from San Francisco, this play called Trial of One Short-Sighted Black Woman versus Mammy Louise and Sofrita May. And it was this woman suing Aunt Jemima for race crimes. It was dope. You know what I mean? Like, political. And I got to play five, six different characters. And I played all the witnesses, you know what I mean? And they had this mask work that was just half my face as a mask. So I played a Hollywood producer, Evan Hershey. And I played a slave master. I played the slave master's wife. I played, I don't know, some other characters, but you could always tell it was me, but people at the end of the show would be like, where are all these other people? And it was just me. So it was so that show was over. And, living in New York or living anywhere, it's great until you're unemployed. And when you're unemployed, it's you see the dark, dirty side of a city, you know? And then I was I couldn't. So I would go into casting directors' offices and they'd be so where'd you train? And I'm I went to the art school. And they're like, what? And so they just didn't take you on the East Coast anyway. They didn't really take you serious. And so I had never even actually taken an acting class. Well, except for in high school. And so I had a friend who's going to Yale, to the Yale School of Drama. And I was like, man, I don't think I want to live in New York and be an actor if this is what it means to just do these really shitty jobs and for no money. And, theater is if you have a LORT contract, which is League of Regional Theaters, that's what it stands for. And, you get a decent contract would be 8 weeks of rehearsal. You're making at least, $1,907, $800 a week before taxes. And so then it's not a lot of money, but I didn't have any kids and family. And so it was just me. So I could live off of that. But that's kind of the best as good as it gets. I mean, I've done some other shows where we had 3 weeks of rehearsal to try to learn. I wish I had the book here because I was just rereading this play that I had rehearsed for 3 weeks, and I highlighted all my lines and I went back and looked at it. I'm like, God damn, that's a lot. So anyway, it really lets you know why you want to be an actor. Some people I talk to, young people or just people just starting out or whatever, and I'm like, why do you want to be an actor? It's like, oh, I want to be famous. And I'm just like, yeah, this is pretty much the least glamour looking profession that you can have. I mean, shooting some, I mean, my days now in the Orville are an average of 12, 14 hours. That's 12 hours in prosthetic makeup. It's itching. My skin is on fire, cause if I shaved too soon, and then we go and we put the makeup on and then the makeup reacts to my skin. It's not pleasant all the time. A lot of times it's really shitty, but because I grew up in the theater and just working, for 30 years almost in those conditions where it's you're not making a lot of money, but it's the art that you're creating in front of live audiences is unparalleled to anything that I'd still put it up against anything today. Just that experience and that feeling of captivating and holding an audience, a room full of people's attention, and everybody's sort of agreeing that we're gonna go on this journey, of storytelling together. It's as old school as you can get. It's like sitting around a campfire. That's just timeless. You know what I mean? All the way back to before the Greeks, before, the very big cavemen sitting around, reenacting the hunt and we got this Tyrannosaurus, but Leroy, he didn't make it.
Why is it always got to be Leroy?
I don't know, because Leroy just sounds like the dude that's going to get eaten first or killed in the movie.
But the way you break it down, you can tell there's so much passion there for that. The way you just went on about it, it was just the extreme passion of it. And as you mentioned, I think a lot of, and not just acting, so many industries, people get in it for the wrong reason, money or fame. And as you can see there, you have to do the legwork. You have to do the legwork before you.
Yeah.
There's only one Tom Cruise, right?
Yeah, and the sad thing is there's 10 Tom Cruises, but there's only the one that got through the. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Actually, that's a better way to put it. Yeah.
10 Picassos, but only that one. There's so many moving parts and factors.
Timing and luck.
Yeah, and opportunity meeting preparation. But then there's also like nepotism too. Like there's also people who are like famous now because they come from famous, you know.
Yeah. And,
you know, whatever. Like Picasso's dad was like a huge, amazing, like rich painter. You know what I mean? And, you know, in Spain, and, like by the time Picasso was 15, his dad was like, you're way better than me. So I'm going to just like turn it over to you. So, I mean, I just think that they're like, you know, and like, I think about my own kids now, like they're Angelinos now growing up, like, and, you know, they don't really want for anything, but like trying to keep them. And yeah, I know they're 2 and 4. I mean, but they're like young, you know, they're like, you know, black men that will grow up in this world. And just like, hey, we haven't had to have all of that yet, but just like trying to not just trying to keep them from being assholes, you know, because it's like kids have like, you know, when you have like, well, I didn't sometimes me and my brother share the same underwear, you know what I'm saying? It's like, well, you can have them this day and we wash them. And but like, yeah, my kid, like they're like little rich kids, you know what I mean, compared to where I grew, you know, like I know that right. A lot of kids that are way better off than we are, but like I know that I'm way better off than I was when I was their age. And so, you know, just trying to keep them with a level of humility and gratitude and just trying to keep them respectful and all of that stuff. I forgot why I went down that road, but
I think that's the job as a parent, right? The first 6 years of this, teach them not to be assholes.
That's it, right? We could all relate to that, right. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
If I leave this world knowing that I didn't raise 3 assholes,
yeah,
I did all right, as far as I'm right. concerned. Exactly. I did all right.
Because no. It's a lot. First, you got to keep them alive.
That's the goal.
Right. You know, I just think that, I mean, maybe I'm a point that's kind of bubbling around in my head is that it's not easy. And if it were easy, it wouldn't be as, I don't know, everybody would do it, whatever. But I just feel like it's like, you know, it takes a lot to really get masterful at something or be whatever it is, passionate. Like, I wish I was like a masterful accountant. I'd be like,
whoa. Right.
You know what I'm saying? I wish I had a passion for numbers and bean counting. But yeah. I just, you know, like the obelisk sitting right here. And like, I'm just like, no. But, you know, and especially now during, you know, like these crazy FUBAR times, you really like, so like a lot of theaters, you know, have closed. A lot of everything is closed. A lot of, you know, opportunity for creatives to do their work has just been shut down. And so, but then other things like pop up like this stuff, like Zoom stuff, you know, like necessity is mother to invention, right? So it's like, you know, you come, like things come up that we weren't, like last time we were hanging out in Colorado, or I think that's where
it was. Omaha,
which is right by Colorado. Mm-hmm. who knew? Like if you would have said, in like a year and a half, bro, every two dimension, you're gonna be in your, like, what's your background and like game, like step your background game up, because that's what it's gonna, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, where, yeah.
You just didn't know what was coming, you know? And but yet I think a lot of good things have come out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's, and I think more than anything on a macrocosmic level, I think people have had to really dig deep and go inside and see really like existential questions. You know what I mean? That are just like, what's my purpose? What am I doing? How do I deal with myself when I'm not distracted by having to go to work or having this or that? Like, and it's just me alone in my room, or have to figure out like some way to get out of, you know, or pay my bills or be creative or just stay in communication with other people or just not go crazy or get too fat or drink too much, I haven't mastered those yet.
Still struggle. I'm struggling with those last ones.
That's why we stick to podcasts.
Exactly.
We have bodies for podcasts. So Peter, once you kind of broke through and you started getting, you know, these opportunities to act on the small screen, mm-hmm. In television and doing other things, how was the transition and how does it feel now to kind of be almost the mainstay in a lot of these episodic series that are on television?
Well, I mean, I always tell people that it just sucks until it doesn't, you know, but then it'll suck again. And it just like dips and rises. And to be honest, I was damn near homeless before I got a break. I think it was like 2011, 12, 13, something like that. When I came back to LA from, I went up to Oregon to work at a Shakespeare festival up there. Oregon Shakespeare Festival is like the oldest Shakespeare festival in the Western hemisphere. Like it's like, it started in 1939. But, you know, quality, you know, stage work. But so then I left that because I was like, I'm going to stay up here forever. If I don't get out of here, I got to get out of here. Because it's like, I went up there for 6 months and stayed for 5 years. And I was like, you got to go. So then I got back and I was like, you know, auditioning. My agency at the time were they were putting me out and stuff, and I couldn't catch a break, and I couldn't book anything. And like the sublet that I had was running out and I had no money. And I'm like, well, you're just going to have to go find some place to go park and sleep in your car until you figure it out. And that was like, and then two days before all of that was going to happen, my agent got me this audition for that book, this job, took me up to Vancouver. And it's too bad because it was a pilot that didn't make it, but it was like the premise was that they were mining the moon for ice. And then like there were Russians and Chinese, like there are all these different factions up there warring over like these resources. And it was a pretty cool concept, but yeah, I was like, oh, great. But like, I went from, you know, sleeping in this mosquito infested loft downtown to a 5-star hotel in 2 days. It was just, again, dips and rises where it's like, okay, you're going to have to be eating, you know, ramen noodles and say whatever to just, you know, room service. And it's just, and just being able to roll and be even with both of them. So, you know, and then it was a bit of a learning curve in just terms of like just trying to read like the schedule and just know what you're supposed to be doing and like staying focused, you know, like because there's so many, again, like I said, moving parts just on a set, you know, like in trying to, as opposed to being in the theater where it's like 3 hours of suspension of disbelief, but where you have like 12 hours of like tedious, like broken down non-linear storytelling, and you know, just getting used to that. So like now I can just, you know, just fall in and just like just go where I need to be, and like without like having to like prepare all day kind of thing. I just know that, like, you know, and I think that's sort of the great thing about being on a show, on being a series regular on a TV show is almost akin to being like in a long running theater play. So like now, like the transition is pretty smooth. But although I did go and do something after the first season of The Orville, I went and shot an episode of, I think it was SEAL Team, and I sucked. I was horrible. because I was so used to doing one thing, you know what I mean? Whereas before, I used to be able to bounce around and do all kinds of like, you know, this character, that character, this game, whatever. But like, it just took me so long to, not so long, but I spent so much time investing myself in building out the character of Bordas, which is a brand new character that, you know, like I basically built, that by the time I was trying to go do something else, it just didn't translate. And it was pretty fucking embarrassing. But, you know, the next day I went back to set, I came home and told my wife, I was like, yo, that was horrible. I'm surprised. I'm gonna get fired. They didn't fire me. And I went back and I'm like, okay, let me just sort this out and figure out. And the thing is because I was playing like a Cobb, right? A chief of the boat on the submarine. And it was very like similar to, you know, being like third in command on a starship. I mean, they're very sort of similar things, but like, I didn't, it was like I was doing Bordas, but without the makeup. You know what I mean? It just didn't work. It just didn't translate. And that was something that I had to learn. But like, I mean, I think that this whole thing is, you know, it's all about learning and you know, adjusting and growing and trying to just, you know, and if you don't want to do that, well, you have to do it anyway, no matter what. There's certainly easier ways to make a living. At least there used to be. I don't know what it's like now. Ain't nobody got no job. You know, so it's just something that is just always, I've always kind of been on this, I don't know, like this way of expressing myself, I suppose. I mean, because I feel like if I didn't have this and I didn't have like a family to support and I would probably just be a criminal. Like a white collar criminal. You know what I mean? Like I figure out, like not like where nothing, like I'm like a cat burglar or something like that. You know what I mean? Like I don't mean like I'm like, but you know,
that F word, that family word changes a lot of things. Oh, that's for sure.
There's I live in sweatpants. I don't, it's not that I don't try, but it's like I just don't have a lot of reason to put on a button-down shirt or like.
Listen, I'm in my track pants right now, so I'm not even judging. No, yep.
Like, I'm so like consumed, especially now, like that they're home a lot, but that, you know, they're back in school. Kind of the days are just consumed with like either, you know, making sure they're okay and chasing them around, playing with them, engaging with them, reading, you know, teaching, and watching stuff together, and you know, feeding them, bathing them, And then by the time like 9 o'clock or so rolls around, I'm so damn tired.
Right.
I'm like, you know, trying to do something else, you know, like go paint or work on some music or read a play or read a book or something, just to kind of keep myself charged up. You know what I mean? It's full time, you know, it's full on. So
Gallo and I are fathers of older ones, and I hate to give this information to you, but you remain tired for the rest of it. It doesn't change.
That's right here. I told my wife, I'll see you in 18 years.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, you still remember me. But yeah, no, I mean, it's cool, you know, because it's like my son is, they're interested in, just funny to seeing life through their eyes. Like my son, my oldest son is interested in languages. And now he's all about Roblox, which is, I don't know where that shit came from, but like.
Oh God, here all day, every day, bro.
Yeah, all day.
Roblox, yep.
Yeah, but it's, you know what, I can take that iPad away and it just like crack. Please don't take my iPad. Like, put your socks on, brush your teeth, then you can have your iPad back. Okay, I'll do anything for it.
I was a person, to relate it to me, was a person that never wanted to be a father. Oh, and really? At the age of 20, that like very young changed for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of things that define me, but I feel like that's the main thing, not only that does, but that I want to define. Hey, though,
that's mad young.
Yeah, it was. Uh-huh. Yes, it was. It was. No, it's another thing that you bring up too. It's to relate it to some of the other things you're saying is anybody can have a child. I think it goes back to the passion that you're talking about, the other things that makes you, it's hard to explain to somebody who doesn't have kids. Cause that 9 PM exhaustion, like Gallo, myself understand when you say that it's the best exhaustion you could ever have, though, too, at the side, like, right? There.
Just make it to the finish line.
So that's right.
On the acting part, going back to that too, I think an important thing to touch on is you do some voice acting too for video games as well. But the reason I mentioned that is that you won an Emmy for, and it's for voiceover work actually too.
So. That was weird. That was like in 2001. I think so.
I listed 2002 for the series Animated Tales of the World.
Yeah, that was nuts because I was in my second year of drama school. And after my first year of drama school, I went to, I saved some money and went to Spain and came back. And I spent all my money. I didn't have I didn't have an apartment lined up for my second year of school. I didn't have, I was ass out. So then I like these people called me and asked me if I wanted to do this job. And like, I made like $400 off this thing, you know, but it was enough to get me back to school and like have like a bit of a, somewhat of a, like I just had to wait till my financial aid would kick in. So it was like, so they gave me enough money to like live off of for like a couple of weeks until I could, whatever, give all my money back to the government. So, and HBO used to do this this series called Animated Tales of the World, where they would take all these different folk tales from all over the world and they would animate them in a variety of ways. And like the animation that I on the one that I worked on was like this impressionistic artist. His name was Andre Zaludikon, and they're like, it's so impressionistic that we don't think that like American audiences are gonna really understand this, or foreign audiences are going to really understand this story about John Henry, American story. So they asked me to narrate it, and I did. And then cut to like I'm like stressing out about going to clown class one Thursday morning, and the registrar's office called me like, yeah, you have a message here, you want some award. And I thought it was like somebody fucking with me, because I was like, you know, because what's all the shit we would do to each other, you know what I mean? No. But no, I mean, it was a creative Emmy, so they weren't like you know, like the primetime Emmys. That it was just such a funny thing. But I was like, what? And so they flew me out here to LA and put me up in a hotel, and I didn't even have a driver's license. I mean, and then it was like trying to explain, you know, they don't give you like a
they just hand you the trophy.
You don't get a box or a case or nothing.
I mean, if you get it sent to you, but yeah, like that happened, and I thought, okay, for sure. So yeah, and I thought that. Oh, here, my voiceover career is set, you know, locked. No. Because then I went back to school. Like, I mean, I was still in school. So I remember we were out here, my friend and I, he flew out, you know, to just hang out. And Stephen Baldwin was in like an Urban Outfitters, and then like right before they were closing, I was just going to buy some sneakers, and like he started chopping it up with Stephen Baldwin, and he's like, yeah, he doesn't have an agent. He needs an agent. He just won an Emmy for voiceover, and like Stephen Baldwin's like, you won an Emmy? You don't have an agent? I'm like, yeah, man, no. But so I went back to school, and then by the time I got out of school, it kind of didn't like. It's not that it didn't matter, but it just wasn't current. Do you know what I mean? And so, and it's great to have. It's here on the like in the room, and that's up on the shelf. And but yeah, I mean like that, especially now like voiceover, you know, work. It's actually much more competitive now because of COVID, because people are just recording everything from home. And you know, like my studio's a really great studio per se, but not really, you know what I mean? And like besides recording the shows and like the voiceover agents that I've had before, they're like, they only deal with people who just deal with movie and promos and stuff and video. But the video game stuff, you know, when I'm able to get it, I'm still auditioning for, you know, stuff now. And it's kind of the luck of the draw, but it's, you know, I've done like a lot of audio books as well. But video games are fun. Cause I mean, and especially like mocap, like I've done like a couple of mocap video games, names I can't remember, but that's fun because it's like, they do so much more with it now. Like, what was I watching? I was watching Love, Death and Robots again. So some of that stuff is just so twisted.
Yeah.
But the animation is you know, then like what Peter Jackson and people are doing with like, you know, Andy Serkis and Planet of the Apes and all those, you know, those mocap jobs. It's like, it's grown so much. So it's so much more fun. But, and sometimes doing voice video games, mocap video games, mad tedious. You know, you think shooting a television show is tedious, but it's like, you're just shooting like little 15 second clips here and there, you know what I mean? Where you have to like, you know, and there's not a lot of set. There's just like, the volume is just like cameras. So you're just like, they're just putting all this stuff in, green screening everything. But yeah, you know, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I feel like part of the reason why I got this job with the Orville is because of, you know, because Seth, he really like, and I think that's kind of the name of the game with a lot of science fiction, like they like a lot of theater actors, because you have to make this make-believe world and language and
right
technology tangible, you know what I mean? And so I see that a lot of theater actors in science fiction because of language and handling language.
I'm really interested in knowing what books Bordas could read to me. I hope there are some like some of those romantic thriller novels that you did the audiobooks for.
Oh god.
With the dryer sound in the background. Oh, sorry, <that's
right. laughs> cut to the scene. You explain it yourself for sure.
And I'd be wearing an ascot in front of a fireplace.
I love it. For sure. Well, you mentioned video games, so I have the list right here. You have Anthem as recent as 2019, Wolfenstein 2, Cool Borders 2, and Twisted Metal 2, which
that's old school.
Yeah, 1996. That was
freaking Bay, man. That was like Nash Bridges days.
yeah, right around there. It's awesome. It's definitely spans quite a bit of time there.
So when I go, when I was able to do some, you know, conventions, and people would be like, so tell me, like, I was like, man, I don't, that was 1996. I don't remember. Because I'm not a gamer, right? You know, so I mean, I used to be like, I had like a PS2, and after playing it for like 14 hours a day, I had to just put it in storage. I'm like, you can't, this has to go away. Because like, you know, I grew up playing like Pinball, then Asteroids, then, you know, Galaga, and like all this. Like, I was like going to the drugstore every day after school with my pocket full of quarters. So I'm prone to video games, but like games now I can't even play. It's like, I'm just like first person shooter games. I'm like, I look like I'm having like an epileptic fit, and it's like, I'm trying to like walk around and play a game. I can't do it. Well, no one wants to play with me. It's fine. I don't need it. But even watching my son like play on his iPad, like him navigating, like I just wasn't a gamer. So I didn't really, It was almost embarrassing to like go to someone waiting in line to talk to you and like you
sit in this panel, right? And then all of a sudden it's just like, yeah, I don't know, it was a job. They called me, I took it.
Like, dude, I didn't wait in line for an hour for this. You better give me something else. So,
oh, it was rad.
Yeah. And I like, but I look forward to, you know, who knows? I mean, I think I'd really like to do well, I have like a small reoccurring role now in Family Guy that's happening. And but I'd love to, you know, like there's a bunch of series that are coming out that are some, like, I'd love to be a part of, because I feel like I have like a really people like don't necessarily know what I look like, but if when I speak at the grocery store or something, I'm like, hey, you're that guy, right? You know, so
you mentioned series you want to do. That's I think a good question there. What is, like, if you got a call today for a movie franchise or a series, you're like, I'm in. Like, we don't even have to discuss it. I'm in.
Funny enough, while I think about an answer, I was the voice of Thanos in Guardians of the Galaxy. And then they gave the job to Josh Brolin when they figured out that they were going to make him a further character. So yeah, I thought I had my James L. Jones, you know, thing on all ready to go. Anything. Like I'm kind of into, I mean, maybe it hasn't been written yet, or Blade Runner 2049 has a 13-minute animation that connects the dots from the first movie. Well, there's three short movies. Oh, it's the narration or the voiceovers for those were pretty cool. But yeah, dude, I don't know, whatever. Okay.
Clown School.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? I mean, I can almost see, you know, with where your career's gone and the different things that you've done, why it would definitely, you know, come in.
Yeah, it was the hardest shit in the world, man. I mean, it was super, super, super intimidating class for 2 years.
Yeah.
In the coursework at Yale, I mean, we had, you know, all kinds of, you know, fighting, like, you know, stage combat fight, you know, this dance. Everything that just puts you in your body, and as well as, like, you know, scene study class and theater history class. But like the clown shit, man, that's actually the best training I think I've received. Because so with Bordas, you know, like there's not a lot of movement in my head. It's very stiff, but like you don't want it to seem like a rubber face. So like I have my eyes and like really small expressions and things that you have to really hone in on and work on. And, you know, just in clown class, dude, I mean, like, it's not like the name of the game is humiliation. Like when you're completely humiliated, it's funny. when you try to be funny, it's not funny at all. And so, you know, you'd have to get up there and, you know, we'd have like these assignments where we had to like perform the greatest trick in the world that is going to fail, but you have to try to. You have to be convinced that you can do it.
You got to sell it.
Yeah. And like, I think one trick I had was I was going to stuff myself into a milk crate. and just like, you know, I mean, and just, and you're sweating and cutting yourself up. But and like to watch this, you know, my size man trying to fit into this crate just and swear to God that I know I can do it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, even if they're doing that for 15 minutes, man, like trying to, like, you know, or like another friend of mine, a classmate, he was like, I'm going to stick to the wall. So he would just run and he was really flexible legs. So he could just like splat on the wall and like fall down every time and just keep watching someone do that. It's almost like a, you know, if people were to look into our class where you're just walking around like, ah! It'd be like this weird. My wife is a psych nurse, and
she's watching you closely.
I'm just saying, it's a good fit. It's like, I think
college or state hospital? I don't know.
You know, we would do like this thing called the Ring of Fire, where you would stand in the middle of a circle and facing people, and you have to make them laugh by just laughing. And it's like, that shit is fucking painful. I mean, to just sit and try to make, I mean, and it gets really weird. It gets really psychotic. But I feel like the training, you know, because it's like, you know, and so we would get our noses. I think you get your nose at the end of the first year. And that's a big, huge deal to have a clown nose and, you know, like it's an identity. Have to pick a name and outfit. And then it's a series of problem solving through like the filter of this clown. And it really is like my children are like, it's really like, it's like my 2-year-old is like on, off, great thing. And then they're like, you know, so that's the essence of what a clown is. It's super innocent and, but it's like a child. It's like we're being, it's like being in touch with like the, our childlike qualities and innocence and like the greatest, like you can have like, and it would literally be like, and it's the best day in the world and da 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 da. And you're walking and you're great and you turn the corner and then there's a long dark hall of despair. And you have to go from like being happy to like this despair. And so it's like, it's putting you rigorously through emotion, like in emotional landscapes and just connective tissue of like going from happy to sad, sad to happy, surprise, angry, you know, all that stuff that like when you have, and it's none of it scripted, of course, but then when you get like a script, you know, or like something like this Orville business, I can take that and again, like just my, the way that I start to process, like the, to build the character is from the process of clown building, I think, because where it's like,
wow.
you take in, you know, obviously the who, what, where, whys, and whens of this person, but you start to build all this like backstory, like with like the joke, like, and that's just what you do, by rote, like out of habit. Like it's like I have to take this two-dimensional thing and three-dimensionalize it. And you know, so like with Bordas and like the Jaloja, like the peeing once a year. Like that's one thing that you find out about him in the first episode. Like I only urinate once a year. And then I started thinking, I was like, well, what is that? What is that about? Like, what does that look like? What is that? Does he have like a huge colostomy bag that he drags around and fills up over the period of a couple? Or, and I just had to like seriously sit down and think about it and make it make sense. And then like the gig is in my brain is if you don't have that pee, you will like drown on your own fluids on the inside. Like you'll like, you know what I mean? Like I had to make it make some sort of like, you know, tragic and comedy, in the comedic sense, you know what I mean? And like, because without the possibility of both those things, it's like, that's, you know, so like, that's the storytelling that like, these are life and death stakes. It gets, and so then it makes it even funnier because, you know, if I don't pee, I'm going to die. That's way funnier than I have to pee once a year. You know what I mean? Like,
no, it's fair.
So you got to get me shit. To my planet. I don't care what's going on. We need to get back to Mokulus. I need to get up on that cliff or I'm going to die. And we have to make that happen. And I think that just raises the stakes. And so I think that, you know, but just in physicality, you know, being a learning or studying clown makes for very specific movement and action and reaction. And this keeping you honestly listening, because you don't never, you don't like when those clowns, you never know what we would get, you know, you never know if, and it's all imaginary too. You know, it's like, oh, all of a sudden you're like, you know, you're being chased by a Tyrannosaurus. And then like the next moment, the Tyrannosaurus wants to brush your teeth. And like, what does that even look like? You know what I mean? We're just like yeah. And that's just, like, you're just doing that for like, and it was twice a week and it was the class like 4 hours long. So when you come out of it, you're just like a nut job, exhausted, sweaty, and you know, probably with the shakes, because it's just like feeling like so, like you just come out of like some weird loony bin. But yeah, I mean, and so I feel like that since then has enabled me to access pretty much any character that I've taken on, because it's like you just start from when this person was like a little one. And that even works great for villains, like playing villains, because it's like I believe that we're all born innocent. And I think that you know, maybe some people have been around the block once or twice before, so they come into the world with a little extra stuff. But you know, like a character like Iago from Shakespeare's Othello, like it's super interesting to figure out when a person, when a villain turns into a villain, you know what I mean? Like, I always love those stories of like, you know, like you know, like back in the day, right now, we just watch like, you know, the Minions and, you know, like Despicable Me and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, but just even learning Gru's, like, you know, his history as a villain and how he was, you know, his mom hated him. Well, you know, all that stuff is why, you know, how I think about it all. So like, I am really interested in the backstory, you know, and I do like a lot of those master classes online, you know, and like Sam Jackson was teaching a class and he was talking about like, you know, you act backstory, you ask yourself all these questions and you don't have to, you don't, no one has to know the answers but you, but as long as you know, no way anything that anybody asks you or anything that you react, it's not foreign. You're just like, you're reacting from that character. So it takes a lot of, you know, just thinking and, you know, putting stuff together, asking yourself a lot of questions, research, you know, and just building from there. I mean, and it's a formula that works for every character that I've ever, except for the one on SEAL Team. I forgot to do that research.
There you go. All right. Well, we definitely want to let you get back to your kids, but I told Gallo I had one very important Orville question. And that's, in your opinion, do you think Bordas could hold his own with Lieutenant Alaric Catan?
I mean, I think eventually he'd lose, but I think he'd give her a run for her money.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and they're like, they don't, like, you learn a lot about Salian, but like, they don't have a liver, so they can just drink for,
right,
you know, there are all these things that Mocklin's fall short with, but you know, anybody else, you know, I'm gonna whoop that ass. I think it would be painful to watch because he wouldn't give up. You know what I mean? Right. It's almost like that fight between the Mountain and the Hound in Game of Thrones. Yeah. Like one of the best fights ever, when like the Hound is like, fuck, I'm kidding. This guy's not gonna die, so I gotta die with him. You know what I mean? I gotta throw him over, you know, spoiler.
Right.
But yeah, it is that kind of deal. Like, I think that, I mean, he'd probably like lose an arm or like, you know, like he'd still be going with like, you know, whatever.
They take a break for the annual pee, though. That's, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess
unless it was Geloja time, then they just piss on her. But hey, that's another story. That's another show.
There you go. Awesome.
That's what I'm going to do. It's going to be Geloja time around here all the time now.
Yeah.
Awesome. What time is it? Right. Geloja time. I'll be back.
Geloja time. Geloja time.
Before we wrap, was there anything we talked to Orville? Obviously, we'll be back soon, but was there anything else you wanted to plug or anything else coming up that people should keep their eyes open for?
You know what? Nah, I'd like to just be, I like to have surprises.
Okay. So, okay.
That's awesome, brother.
I got stuff cooking, but I like to, like, I don't like to talk about it until it's like, until it's there.
Well, when it's time and if you feel you need a platform, we're here for you, brother.
I love that. I love nothing more.
Peter Macon, obviously the Orville, a bunch of other things, check him out. But I think we're at a wrap. So signing out for Gallo, Iggy, and we'll catch you on the next Nerdcast.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.